Well, this portion of the Morning Mess brought to you by and sponsored by FHN. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Timothy Jessen, FHN allergy, asthma, and immunology specialist at FHN. Dr. Jensen, good morning. Hello to you.
Hello, good morning.
Thanks for joining me here today. You're providing penicillin allergy testing at FHN Family Medical Center, Burchard Hills. Are there that many people that are allergic to penicillin, Doc?
Well, there are a number of people that are listed as allergic to penicillin, and we've always sort of just taken them at their word. But there are 10% that are maybe possibly truly allergic, but maybe 40% of people are listed as penicillin allergic. And what we've done recently is we found that through research that 92% of people that are listed as penicillin allergic are no longer penicillin allergic or never were.
All right. And so is, I guess the basic question, let's back up just a moment, is, you know, penicillin, it's an old one. Is penicillin really all that effective anymore?
Well, penicillin and its derivatives, because there are a number of medications and antibiotics that are derived from penicillin, are still very effective and have very nice side effect profiles compared to some of the new drugs. So they're very usable, particularly as first-line antibiotics.
What about the newer antibiotics? Is there anything beyond penicillin?
Well, that's sort of what we've relied on historically, but what we know now is that we have a number of newer antibiotics. They all seem to have additional difficulties. They have more side effects, they have higher cost, and sometimes are even less effective than the penicillin-based antibiotics. And as we've used these broader spectrum antibiotics, we've sort of generated, unfortunately, some of these multi-resistant bacteria or superbugs.
Let's talk about that. Tell us more about these superbugs, and is it a significant concern for someone in your field?
Well, it's a significant concern for those who treat infections, certainly, because we have to use, again, these more powerful, expensive antibiotics progressively over time, and we find bacteria that are just resistant to almost every antibiotic now. And by using some of these second-line drugs, that process has been accelerated.
We're talking to Dr. Timothy Jessen, FHN allergy, asthma, and immunology specialist at FHN today on the FHN Dial-A-Doc program. Doc, I've also heard as well that these drug companies aren't investing in as much in the area of antibiotics because there's not as enough profit margin. Is that the case? Are you finding that to be the case as well?
Yeah, I think that's probably true because, again, there are a number of different antibiotics out there now, and development costs are reasonably high, and it'll be a relatively small market for them, so they're less likely to put a lot of money into that.
Tell us why it's so important to know if you are truly allergic to penicillin. You think you are, you've been told you are, or you've had a reaction in the past. Tell us why that's important to find out the truth.
Well, it allows you to use penicillin-based antibiotics, and usually when infections show up, they don't show up at convenient times. So if you sort this out ahead of time so you know definitively whether you can take penicillin or not, then when you do have an infection, we can use those penicillin-based antibiotics. And we know that penicillin-based antibiotics result in better outcomes for patients, that they get better quicker, and that they have fewer side effects from the drugs.
And what does this test involve? Tell us if a patient's going to come in and get tested, whether or not they're allergic to penicillin. Tell us what happens.
We have a validated set of questions that we use, and that allows us to place people in several different categories. One category is the high-risk category, which if it's high enough risk, we just basically say, you know what, you get to keep your penicillin allergy. That happens very rarely. There's the intermediate risk group, and we can use skin testing, allergy skin testing, to determine whether they're allergic or still allergic to the penicillin. And then what's been developed more recently is a more streamlined process where if, based on the questions, your risk is very low, clearly less than 1%, we actually use a challenge dose where we give people just a small penicillin dose orally, and then we wash them for 60 minutes, and then nothing happens typically, and then we just take that penicillin allergy off your chart.
And when these folks, what are the stories that you hear when people say, no, I'm allergic to penicillin? What something had happened, they had a reaction in the past, and what do you think had happened? Is it just that they had a reaction and it was coincidental that they had just gotten penicillin and it then put two and two together and got five? Or what do you typically think happened when people think they're allergic to penicillin but really aren't?
Well, the number of stories kind of varies. From I was told I was allergic to penicillin because my parents were allergic to penicillin. So these are folks that have never even had it, but have just been told that. The more common one is people who received penicillin typically during childhood who had a rash of some sort. Childhood illnesses often result in rashes. The rash then gets blamed on the antibiotic because it happens to be there at the time. And so then that just stays with them. The other thing that's very important to know is that even people that were truly allergic to penicillin, that did indeed have a penicillin reaction, if it has been more than 5 years, and most of the folks that I've talked to, it's been decades since they've had their penicillin reaction, the reactivity is lost over time. So I think both the mislabeling because penicillin gets caught in the crossfire, and then the loss of reactivity over time results in that relatively significant number of 92% of people just not being allergic to penicillin at this point.
Doc, how do our listeners go about getting tested at FHN? How does that work?
Well, we do it in the allergy department, and that's 815-599-6930. So it's just a matter of coming into the office and being evaluated, and then we can either do skin tests or we can do the challenge dose, depending on the history.
And is this covered by insurance and Medicare?
Insurance is covered just like any other office visit, but it is a specialty visit since it's allergies. So insurance is, you need to check with your insurance to make sure it's a covered service.
And what if you're not a current patient at FHN? Can you still get tested by you at FHN?
Yeah, I see referrals from outside systems with some frequency. Again, as long as the insurance coverage is there, it's fine.
Before you leave, I know I'm not scheduled to talk to you about this, but I'm sure you can shed light on it. And I think it's a big topic, and maybe you'll come back at some point and we'll talk about this specifically. But in terms of allergy to peanuts, the peanut allergy and peanut butter, I've heard a couple of recent cutting-edge stories about peanut butter in order to maybe not have that allergy, that you should actually be giving your baby or a young child peanut butter early on. What have you seen that, and what's your thought on all that?
Right. Yeah, that came out of the Israeli study. That was a few years back. A long time ago, people were told not to give peanuts to their children, mostly because there was concerns about aspiration of peanut. There really was never a reason not to give peanut butter to children. But what we found is that when that peanut butter and peanut food was delayed being placed into the diet, that the frequency of peanut allergy went up dramatically. And so now the recommendation is that peanut be introduced, not peanuts themselves, but peanut products like peanut butter or baked goods that are made with peanut butter be introduced early to actually reduce the frequency of peanut allergy.
And when you say early, what age are you talking about for children?
Well, the original data came out of Israel, and in Israel, interestingly, they have teething biscuits that are made with peanut flour. So we're talking very early. As soon as kids are chewing on biscuits, they are getting exposed to peanut. So, so peanut in a baked good can be introduced very early.
And what's your recommendation? What do you feel is the best way to do that?
Well, again, if you can find some kind of teething biscuit or something along those lines, and at 6 months introduce it, I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
And a spoonful or a half a teaspoon of just plain peanut butter, that's easy to digest as well, isn't it, for children?
Yeah, kids. You don't want to put too much in a small baby's mouth though, because they have to get all that moved around, and it's pretty sticky stuff. But you put a little bit on the end of a spoon and let them lick it. That's fine.
All right. Okay. Well, great. Great information. Doc, appreciate it. Let's talk again soon. Great information today. Really appreciate talking to you.
All right. Thank you.
There we go. That's Dr. Timothy Jessen, FHN Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Specialist at FHN. The preceding brought to you by and sponsored by FHN.